Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. The 17th Annual Berkshire International Film Festival is taking place June 1st through the 4th, and on the evening of Saturday, June 3rd, BIFF will host a special event tribute to award-winning actor Stephen Lang. Best known for his work in James Cameron's Avatar franchise, he's also known for performances in Gettysburg, Gods and Generals, Tombstone, Don't Breathe, and his extraordinary, critically acclaimed solo performance, Beyond Glory, which he also wrote and for which he won numerous awards. His Broadway credits include Death of a Salesman, A Few Good Men, The Speed of Darkness, and Hamlet. His work has earned distinguished awards and nominations, including the Tony, Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, Helen Hayes, and Joseph Jefferson Awards. He also received the Chairman's Medal for Distinguished Service from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Bob Hope Award from the Congressional Medal of Honor Society for Beyond Glory. Lang will be in conversation with WAMC's Joe Donahue at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts at 7 p.m. on June 3rd. The conversation will be followed by a screening of the 1989 film Last Exit to Brooklyn. Stephen Lang joins us now. Hello, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
How did they notify you that you'd be the honoree of this year's BIFF, and what does it mean to you?
I received a call, I think, or maybe an email from my dear friend Karen Allen, who, as you probably know, is deeply connected with the festival. And she asked me if this would be something I'd be willing to do. And I kind of scratched my head and said, me? And then thought about it and thought, you know, you should take the good stuff when it comes. And so I agreed to it, and that's how it comes to pass.
Now let's jump back several decades and tell me a little bit about how you discovered your passion for acting, what made you want to become an actor, and how you've pursued it through your lifetime.
You know, I don't really remember a time when I didn't want to be an actor, although I think for a brief time I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was about four. I really never made it through the A's, you can see, you know. But, you know, the truth is I'm not so sure that if I wanted to be an actor, it's just that I'm of a generation and I grew up with television and the movies and watching, you know, Errol Flynn as Robin Hood and so many other shows that I could name on television. You know, what I wanted to do is I wanted to have the adventures that they were having. And also back in those days, they did a lot of shows or a number of shows with young men, young boys as the protagonist, you know, like Lassie. There were a number of them. And, you know, it was very easy to project oneself, which I think is the intention, you know, of the show, to project oneself into the role. So I always wanted to do it. I did a lot of, you know, playing and pretending and stuff like that. And then at some point just decided this is what I was going to do. And so I did.
You often portray very physically strong people in the films that you act in. Do you have to maintain a health level for your acting career, and does that come easily to you? I should say fitness.
No, it's, look, fitness is, it's just one of those things where fitness, which is for me kind of a requirement for the job, for me to do the job, also is a pretty good thing just in terms of one's life. It seems to me, you know, I'm dealing with two things at once there. I do. I don't know. Somewhere down the line, you get identified, I suppose, with a certain thing. And I'm cool with that. You know what I mean? I do like playing characters of weakness, and I have done that,
of course,
many times over the years. But I do enjoy, I know that I can project a certain amount of power or strength. And as long as I can continue to do it, I think I would like to, because, you know, I'm not a kid, and so you want to just kind of keep, I just want to keep at it, you know, see how long it can last.
How do the projects that come to you now, how do they typically come to you? Is it through an agent, or are you offer only? Do you get to pick and choose a little bit now?
Well, they do usually come through the agents. There are people who will, you know, always kind of try to come in through the back door, and occasionally that's okay, but most of the time things are going to get rerouted to the agency anyway. I would never say that I wouldn't audition for something if called upon by, you know, the right you know, a director I really wanted to work with, playing a role I really wanted to play that I knew was going to be competitive. So certainly, I mean, you know, as a rule, I don't do it too much anymore. And to be perfectly honest, I was never very good at it. Mm-hmm. I would say 1 in 5 or 1 in 7, maybe 1 in 10, kind of an inspired audition where I just kind of nailed it. But a lot of the times I just floundered. I never really, really got it. So thank goodness there were a couple of times that were important to me where I did manage to nail it. And so, you know, I've managed to kind of progress, I suppose.
Absolutely, you have, of course. What was it about auditioning that you think made you not, in your words, good at it?
I think I had a chip on my shoulder, is what I think. Yeah, I think it's that simple. I think it took me a long time. You know, I'm not a conservatory trained actor. And although I'm relatively well educated and well read, but my background really was in liberal arts, not in acting training. So I didn't go to a conservatory. And when I was coming up, it certainly was a time when there were, you know, very conspicuously fantastic actors coming out of Yale and Juilliard and Chicago and Texas, a lot of wonderfully, you know, well-trained actors. And I always felt, I think, you know, slightly inadequate to it, and was always playing kind of catch-up ball in a way. And so, you know, that kind of insecurity can manifest itself sometimes in a certain kind of arrogance, it seems to me, you know, kind of a false bravado. And I think I had a bit of that. And I think over the years I managed to realize it and to jettison it. But it took me a while, if that makes sense. You get aggressive because you're afraid.
Right. You're defensive. That's, because you're, yeah, feeling inadequate.
And I no longer feel that way. I
Fantastic.
Feel perfectly active for the moment.
Well, that's very good.
I'm better now.
In any interview like this, the host, the interviewer, lists a bunch of credits to try to give people an idea of who the person they're speaking with is, and, you know, listeners in case they don't know, or to remind them. But was there anything that is very standout in your career that I didn't list? Any project that you think maybe gets under-recognized today or other days?
Probably. I mean, I know, you know, one of the things that I really worked so hard and was so proud of was back in 91, I played Babe Ruth in a telefilm for NBC. Back in the day, NBC was great with that, and worked so hard on it. And it's kind of a, you know, doing a film, a biographical film about Babe Ruth is not a, it's not an easy thing because it's very kind of linear in a way, you know, the narrative. And, but it always, it sort of becomes a best of scrapbook in a way. But we managed to find a really fine dramatic through line, and it was a very rewarding part for me to play and a difficult part for me to play as well. So I always have a special affection for that one. But, and you know, there are many of them. I loved Public Enemies, working again for Michael Mann. I did a picture a couple of years ago called Mortal Engines, where I played a CGI character called Shrike. And I loved that role. And I actually had signed a board for 3 films play this role, but the film didn't do very well, and so it never progressed past the first one, which was really heartbreaking to me because I wasn't done with that particular role. And I'm sure I can think of, you know, other things if put to it, you know. Yeah.
You just mentioned playing a CGI character, and you, of course, are in the Avatar films, which involve a lot of CG and green screen. How does it work with your acting style? How do you keep acting when there is so many technical demands for a film, when a film is, you know, mostly shot in a studio with green screens, et cetera?
Well, you know, the truth is that for all green screen or CGI or performance capture aside, film is a very technical art in the first place. And so you're always dealing with the technical aspects of film, and you incorporate that into your approach, and it becomes second nature. Now we as a movie going public, we understand how films kind of are made. And so it doesn't, we don't even think about the technical aspect of it all that much anymore back in the day. But now it's like, wow, how do you do it with CGI? Well, it's kind of it's just a variation, you know, on it. It's, you just need to, you understand what's required of you, and you deliver it in an authentic and a simple and a truthful manner. You know, it's in no way is performance capture particularly inhibiting towards the art and the craft of acting. I'd say the craft comes into play big time because it does require technique. You know, it really does. And it's learnable. But, you know, everything in every project I've ever done has required at some point a different skill set, you know? And so so it's not that unusual to me. But I will say it's unique, acting and performance capture. You know, it's quite something. It's and I've gotten so used to it. I'll tell you really, really quickly, of course, you know, we had
Take
all these
time.
Kids.
Mm-hmm.
We had all these kids who were working on Avatar 2, The Way of Water, and many of them had either not done a film before or had done very little film work. None of them had done extensive careers. And so here they were, and acting to them is performance capture. That's how they've really, really learned, you know, to act. And I think that the kids were very fortunate to have wonderful mentors like Sigourney Weaver and Kate Winslet and Sam Worthington and Zoe Saldana and James Cameron, but also us old pros, we were learning from them as well because they're just fearlessly going at it. You know, they don't know no better. That's what acting is.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Anyway, I don't know if that answers the question, but it's some of my thoughts on performance capture.
No, it very much does. I also did, you mentioned at the beginning of that answer that film is very technical anyway. Could you, you know, take us a little bit behind the scenes as to some of the technical things you think the general audience maybe doesn't know has to happen while you're making a film?
Sure, but I mean, look at just in a conventional film setup, you're going to, we have a scene that's happening in a room between you and I, and maybe somebody else is in the scene as well. And so there are going to be various shots that are going to establish geography of the scene, that's going to establish our relationships physically and in other ways to each other. And so certain shots are going to be done in a certain order. And if we have an emotional moment, you and I may, it may be in my interest and in the interests of the film to in some ways keep my emotions in, not in check, to rein them in until it's my turn, mm-hmm. you know, until the camera is on me. In other words, I feel like I can cry once, but I don't think I can cry on cue four times, you know. So that's just an example. Of it, you know, it's, and that's a technical thing. That's something that an actor would know, would make a judgment. Of course, you know, hitting your mark, right? I mean, it's important that you do that because you're serving the lens, you're serving the film, you need to be where you're supposed to be to look right. I mean, you look at a film like Casablanca, for example, and every, the way the shadows, you know, are just play across Ingrid Bergman's face or Bogart's face or something like that, you know, they're really hitting very precise marks there, you know. So it is. It can be a very technical art as well.
Stephen Lang will be honored at the 17th Annual Berkshire International Film Festival on June 3rd. After your live conversation with my colleague Joe Donahue, the festival is going to screen your film Last Exit to Brooklyn, which is a 1989 film. Could you tell us about that?
That film is, I've only actually seen it with one eye open, to be honest, and I haven't seen it since it came out. That film was sent to me, and I remember reading it, and I got to page 46, and I threw the script across the room. And the next day, my agent called me, and they were going through some projects. And they said, what about Last Exit to Brooklyn? And I said, well, no, I don't, nah, that's not for me. And he went, okay. And then about 10 minutes after that call, the agent in the next office who was actually handling that project called, and he said, I hear you don't like Last Exit to Brooklyn. What's the problem? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I mean, to be honest, I didn't finish it. And he says, well, why don't you finish it? Because they want to know how much you want to do the picture. Now, this happened at a time when I talk about auditioning, where to get a lead in a film, I mean, I would obviously have to audition. And here I was being offered the lead in what was clearly a big movie and with no audition. So I read it. And when I got to page 46, I realized very clearly that I was afraid of it. I was just afraid of this role. And I came to the conclusion that that's not a bad response, as long as you kind of cop to it and decide to enter in, you know? And so I did, and making it was a singular experience. It was a gritty film to make. We made it in the Red Hook section of Brooklyn, much of it, and then we actually went to Germany to film some interiors in Munich because the director Uli Edel was German, and more importantly, possibly the producer Bernd Eichinger was German, and this was a book that these two men had wanted to make into a film for 25 years,
yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so it's so fascinating that the sensibility that got brought to this film about New York, about Brooklyn, Last Exit to Brooklyn, was filtered through the consciousness of these Germans. And I had the same experience, in a sense, when we did the film of Death of a Salesman, which also is Brooklyn. And that was directed by Volker Schlondorf, who directed Tin Drum. And again, it was America through the lens of someone who is not native. And it was fascinating to see the differences and what they emphasized. So, but Last Exit was a real privilege to work on. It was dark. It was painful. I loved every minute of the kind of self-flagellation that went on with the part, working with some excellent actors. Yeah, it's a long time ago. And then when I finally went to see it, I really sat there, like I say, with one eye open. It was just too kind of painful to watch. But I will also say that, you know, the score of Last Exit to Brooklyn is by the great Mark Knopfler.
Right.
And so that's something I think that's a big, big, wonderful selling point to the film. And of course, Jennifer Jason Leigh gives a marvelous performance in the film as well.
Biff is also going to screen a more recent movie you made, starring your friend who you mentioned, Karen Allen and Peter Rieger, White Irish Drinkers. Tell us about that one.
That's an independent that I received. The director-writer John Gray called me. This is about 12 years ago now, and asked me if I would do it. And first of all, I liked the title, and as I came to do the picture, I realized really just how an appropriate title it really is for this film. It was to play a very tough character. A hard character, a character who's really been cut off from his own emotions and is really, really hiding an awful lot of, sits on a lot of pain and anger, and has various outlets for it, which are not healthy at all. And, including drinking or abuse, whacking somebody. And so, but having said that, it was really a pleasure to work with John Gray and with Karen Allen, who I absolutely adore, and the great Peter Riegert, and the young actors in it were terrific as well. And he made a wonderful movie. It's a really fine movie that never got the attention or the release that one would hope, but that's not uncommon in the indie world, I suppose. But I'm delighted that it's being screened again, because it's a good movie. And again, the score in that, I'm very fond of it. And it's the band is Come to Me, the Shillelagh Brothers, okay. I believe it was. Yeah, it's a good movie. It's got such a down and dark side to it, and it also has wonderful heart and moments of surprise and laughter in it as well.
That's White Irish Drinkers, which Biff is screening as part of their tribute to you. We've spent the last number of minutes looking back on your career. Let's look ahead for a moment. What are you working on now? What's coming up next? What are you excited about?
The work on Avatar will continue, but not for some months. We're in pretty good shape with that. We have Avatar 3, which will be coming out in December of 2024. Mm-hmm. And that's always on the horizon. The Avatar factor is just kind of part of my life.
It must be, yeah.
Yeah. I've been doing it a long time. I don't know what I'd do without it.
Was it exciting this year to have the second one come out?
Oh, gosh, I can't tell you. I mean, it was because, you know, the anticipation was huge for us. And there were times when I never doubted that it was going to happen. But for a while, the horizon kept receding. You know, it had a mirage-like quality to it. Mm-hmm. And then things got real. And then when it actually opened, it was surreal, yeah. In fact. And to have the kind of to be greeted with the same kind of enthusiasm that we were the first time was totally, you know, did I expect it? No. Did I hope for it? Absolutely. But I think it surpassed expectations, in fact. So anyway, there's Avatar. And then I'm working on other stuff. I have a number of films that I've finished that I'll be out to at various festivals, I think, throughout the year. Promoting and seeing if they, you know, if they can kind of latch on with the public. And then and I'm going to do a film as well, a new film, which is a thriller called Baron's Cove. And that's kind of it. I would really love to have kind of a quiet summer if I can. You know, we have this impending strike. You know, of course, the writers are on strike already, and right. We have coming up. So this over the years at intermittent times, I have done writing, and I wouldn't characterize myself as a writer, but I do like to do it. And so I've decided to embark on a new writing project this summer on the theory that the movie business is going to just kind of be on pause for a while. You know, perhaps I'd love to do a play if something really great comes along. It's been a long time since I've been back on stage, and I'd love to do it. But the thing that I can control right now is embarking on a writing project that I've wanted to do for some time. So that's my immediate future.
The Berkshire International Film Festival pays tribute to Stephen Lang at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts at 7 p.m. on Saturday, June 3rd. Lang will be in conversation with WAMC's Joe Donahue, and their chat will be followed by a screening of the 1989 film Last Exit to Brooklyn. To learn more, visit bifma.org. Stephen Lang, I hope you have a wonderful time in the Berkshires, and thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to it very much.
bifma.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.